Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Okay, for everybody listening, we're going to talk about the composer behind this piece of music. It's called Questi Cazzi di Piccione. It's one of the last works this composer wrote. And I know you know his name, even if you don't recognize this particular piece. Do you know who I'm talking about? Well, here's a hint. Here's a bit of one of his earlier works.
Sometimes we would play it all night long. It was all we knew and easy to, so we wouldn't get it wrong. All we did was bend the string like... Joe's garage. We didn't have no dope or LSD, but a couple of quarts of beer.
That's right. We're going to talk about Frank Zappa. You might know him as a psychedelic rock iconoclast, an avant-garde orchestral composer, a fighter for First Amendment rights, and a general purveyor of the excellently weird. But there's so much more to the Zappa story that has been made public. In fact, most of the extensive Zappa family archive hasn't ever seen the light of day until now. About a year before she passed away, Gail Zappa, Frank's widow, gave a filmmaker full access to the archive to make a documentary about her late husband, who died of cancer in 1993. Since then, the project has broken a fundraising record with the help of more than 8,600 backers. It holds the honor of being the top crowdfunded documentary project of all time. That documentary, titled Zappa, is now complete and will be available to stream this Friday. I'm joined now by filmmaker Alex Winter. His other works include Panama Papers, Deep Web, and Showbiz Kids. And now Zappa, a nearly two-hour look at Frank Zappa's life with never, ever before seen footage and audio from those archives. Alex, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
When did you first become aware of all this material?
The vault is somewhat mythical for anyone who was a Zappa fan. We knew there was a vault. I can't say that I quite realized the scope of this material until I actually went down there. I met with Gail Zappa at the beginning of 2015, pitched her an idea I had for a way into telling Frank's story. And she liked that idea and said I couldn't really tell the story without that material, which they'd never granted to anyone before. But it was somewhat overwhelming, I have to say.
Now, Gail Zappa was reportedly and sort of legendarily really, really protective of her husband's legacy. How did you win the family trust?
Well, she and I became, she's passed on from cancer, sadly, but we spent quite a bit of time together in 2015. I started going up to the house regularly and talking with her, and we became friends. And I asked her that question myself, because I honestly didn't expect her to say yes. You pitch ideas all the time. And Gail was, as you said, she was a tough cookie and very, very smart and very protective. And I honestly thought she was going to tell me to get lost. But she said that she was usually pitched the story as this kind of weird, long-haired rock guitar guy from the 70s, even by people who had deep knowledge of Zappa's work. And I think she was appreciative of the film that we wanted to make was not really looking at Frank as a rock musician at all, certainly a part of what he did. But my impression of him growing up and my interest in him was more about an artist in a very particular period of American history who was had to face the consequences of committing to that kind of life in the face of a lot of adversity, and who also was very engaged with the times around him, which I found extremely uncommon, especially for pop culture figures to not just, you know, spout bumper sticker political slogans about, you know, beating the man, but actually going to Russia and Prague and rolling his sleeves up and fighting censorship in the Senate. And it was just an extraordinary life.
Yeah, it was so interesting. Some interviewer asked him, like, why are you getting all involved with the stickering of albums and the First Amendment? He's like, well, who, because the interviewer said, it's not about your work. He's like, who cares that it's about my work? It's about rights. It's about standing up for everyone's rights. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I found it extraordinary, especially in that era. It was a very, it was really a highly individualistic era. And Zappa was known for having a really protective brand centered around himself. And yet, I think he had really matured into an artist who was concerned about the, you know, encroaching authoritarianism all over the world and in the U.S. and felt it was incumbent upon him to do something about it. And that was not all he did. He created voter registration drives, mm-hmm. and he put voting registration booths into the lobby of his concerts. It just really beyond what most of the other artists were doing at his time.
My guest is Alex Winter. We're talking about the new film Zappa. You start the film in Prague with Zappa's final recorded performance on guitar. It was 1991, a celebration of the withdrawal of Russian troops. And here's what he told his fans in the newly founded Czech Republic.
I'm sure you already know it, but this is just the beginning of your new future in this country. And I hope that your new future will be very perfect, very perfect. And as you confront the new changes that will take place, please try and keep your country unique. Don't change into something else. Keep it unique. And now I will try and tune my guitar.
Why did you start the film there?
For us, primarily being Mike Nichols, the editor, and myself, we were pouring through, as you can imagine, hundreds and hundreds of hours of media once we unleashed the vault. We were really looking for a way into the story that that conveyed who Zappa was in not a literal way, but almost an abstract way. And you know, here we find him at the what unknown to the public, because he was only in his he was only about 50, I think, around the time of this particular event, 51. He had terminal cancer, which no one knew, and the public was completely unaware that he was dying. And yet here he was heralding the rebirth of a country and its fight against oppression. Facing a very loving crowd, a massive crowd of adoring fans, and you know, playing his guitar, which he was very famous for. It really encompassed his humor, his political interests, his stature as an artist. But there's something in his face during this that has so much depth to me and poignancy, and I think it was largely because, you know, while Czechoslovakia was rising out of these ashes, he knew that his own time was limited. And it speaks to a kind of push-pull that carries through the whole film in a way.
We do learn a lot about his early life. His father worked at a weapons lab where they manufactured nerve gas. And when he was a kid, he was interested in explosive chemistry. He played with beakers. He learned how to make gunpowder when he was about 6. At 15, he talks about trying to set a bomb off at school. From watching all of this footage, why was he always someone who saw a boundary and just sort of shrugged and said, boundary, I don't care?
Yeah, that defiance, that maverick spirit was certainly with him from the beginning. And what makes a human being have that kind of drive? I think that's a real question. For me, Zappa was often called a workaholic because he was extremely prolific and he worked around the clock. But I think it's a little shallow. I think there was something in his drive, something in the way that he approached life. And he really liked artistic exploration. And he also was very interested in collaboration. He was always working with other artists and always working with teams of people. So he wasn't really just tucked away in an ivory tower. So I found that very fascinating. I can't say I've cracked him. Often with docs, you don't tend to try to crack someone. It can be impossible. But I find that drive very fascinating, and it didn't wane.
The other thing that was came up again and again was, you know, he said, you know, growing up in a small town's okay, if that's what you like, but that's not what I'm about. He didn't think he could make what he wanted and see his art through in that kind of environment. What was he trying to get away from, should I say? What was it about small town? Because early in his career, when he was a young man, he had to start his business in a small town. He also lived in a small town with small town ideas. What was he trying to get away from?
I think there was a kind of bigotry against ideas of liberation, both artistic liberation, personal liberation, and ultimately political liberation, that he was always battling against. And what the film, the story we tell, the narrative we tell, really is someone who can never get away from that. And the realization that he has, which I think every grown-up has, you know, if they have the benefit of maturing, of realizing that, of course, it's not the town, it's us, right? It's the human condition. And if to the degree that we have a narrative theme, I think that's it, is he's running for a good part of his life away from a certain type of small-mindedness and, you know, beyond that, what would become almost fascist thinking. And ultimately says, you know what, I can't keep running from this. I'm going to suit up and I'm going to go fight it. And he spent the latter period of his life really publicly battling this type of thinking and the things that he had initially run away from.
My guest is Alex Winter. We're talking about the documentary Zappa. He ultimately moves to Hollywood, assembles his band. I know the band, the Mothers of Invention. How would you describe him as a coworker?
He was famously difficult. He was really, his reputation is a martinet who would fire people without a moment's hesitation. He was stone cold sober and did not allow anyone in his band to be on drugs and would fire them instantly, even if they were on the road, if they were not clean. He was a taskmaster and he was extremely rigid about the level of musical acumen that he required to play his music. All of that being said, he was an extraordinary collaborator and discovered a great many artists and made many careers. And the thing that I discovered, which I was hoping I would, I suspected it when I began to do interviews, was that even if people came in to sit for an interview with me and were unleashed a torrent of vitriol about how hard it was to work with him, halfway through the interview, their eyes would well up and they would start talking about how much their experience with Zappa meant to them and how extraordinary he was at collaborating and how much attention he paid to the people he worked with and wanted their best, but also wanted them to have the freedom to create their own art within the work they were doing. So he's a dualistic person. I mean, I know most people are, but he really is a starkly dualistic person. He was a very contradictory person in many ways. So difficult, but also beloved.
The Mothers of Invention didn't really take off in L.A. There's a clip in the film where Frank says the California hippies didn't really embrace them. So they come to New York in 67. How did that change his approach to music and performing, and how did it all evolve during his time at the Garrick Theater here in New York City?
It's funny. That was a period of his life that I was most interested in personally. I talked to Gail almost immediately about the Garrick. I come from a theater background, and my parents were modern dancers. My mom had a company in London when I was born, so I grew up around on stage and backstage, and this idea of a ostensibly pop rock artist who had put out an album. It did okay. Didn't love the reception. He didn't pull a Hendrix and move to London and just do the same shtick. He moved into essentially an off Broadway theater in the West Village and just performed all day, every day for the better part of a year. And I just never heard of anything like that. And growing up and having studied a lot of avant-garde theater, I was really intrigued by the idea of somebody forming their artistic identity by just showing up on a stage with a band and doing stuff. And it wasn't music often. They were putting on shows and plays, and they were bringing audience members on stage. And out of that crucible came Zappa, the artist that we knew. So I found that entire period extraordinary. And I was very grateful when we unleashed the footage of the Garrick, because mm-hmm. it's never been seen.
It's not a hagiography. You point to some of his difficulties as a member of his own family. You know, he could be very, some very warm and cute footage of him with his children, their babies rubbing his tummy, their tummies and stuff. But he could be somewhat cold about his marriage, especially when it came to infidelity. How did he view family in the context of his whole life?
I think that, like many artists who are almost preternaturally driven, I mean, driven beyond almost their own comprehension in a way. I think of other artists like Prince musically, I think of Kubrick. And I think there's similarities between Zappa and Kubrick. They both created almost hamlets, work environments that were at home around their family so that they could be with their family. And yet they were mostly working. Vacations were unheard of, and there was no such thing as a day off. But he was also a somewhat conservative Italian patriarch. And I really believe that Zappa saw himself as a family man, despite the fact that most of his waking hours were spent in the recording studio. So there were contradictions there. And I wanted to dig into them. I said to Gail from the beginning that I really didn't feel the film could be made if we didn't drive headlong into some of the, you know, seemingly problematic aspects of Zappa's personality. And she was open to that, thankfully. But I, you know, I did it respectfully. But I was really intrigued by looking at that. And I think it's certainly a dynamic that people face all the time. But I think it was particularly glaring in the 60s and 70s, when you had these movements, the sexual revolution and other movements of individualization that were pulling against this idea of a nuclear family. And that's tricky. It looks good on paper. It's a hard thing to actually do in practice.
My guess is Alex Winter. We're talking about his documentary Zappa. So someone says Frank Zappa never wanted to even have a hit in his career, and he ended up having one with his daughter Moon Unit, this sort of pop song called Valley Girl. We all remember it. And after the success of it, an interviewer asks him essentially what's next, and here's what he says.
What's happening in the future now? Are you planning a follow-up right away to cash in on the audience's receptivity? Or what?
No, as a matter of fact, the next thing that I'm going to do is go out to CalArts tonight and hear a couple of piano players give a performance of some of my orchestra music.
Why was that important to him, to just move on past it and pursue his orchestral work?
There's a lot of theorizing about why Zappa didn't want radio hits. We play with it in the film. Alice Cooper comes out and says he thinks Frank was afraid of commercial mm-hmm. success. And then Ian Underwood, who played with Zappa for years, counters that and says he just doesn't think it was in Zappa's mindset. I think that's the right answer. I think that Zappa had a very personal and important relationship to his public. He was not dismissive of his audience. He did not think he was above being a showman, and he knew he needed money to eat and to make more music. So he was not anti-capital by any stretch. That being said, I think that he was very concerned that following the appetites of commercial radio would destroy his artistic integrity in terms of his ability to make the art that he wanted to make. And I found it interesting that he made Valley Girl, and then he went and cleansed his palate by doing some very dissonant stuff at a university.
And there's a whole lot of interesting information about his political and activist work in this film as well. The name of it is Zappa. It can be seen on Amazon Prime Video, YouTube, and other streaming services this Friday. Alex, thank you for being with us.